Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I thought we had a fun conversation yesterday on Dog Nation Daily. We talked about some of the things that Chip Towers had said on Monday's episode of the program, that this Georgia offense that struggled in 2016, maybe those struggles continue a little bit in 2017, and maybe this is a UGA team kind of led by its defense here this season. In the midst of that conversation, you know, some of the responses that I got from Georgia fans about that I thought were pretty interesting. For instance, Scott Barman wrote in to our podcast page there on DogNation.com and said, "I'm old enough to remember Dooley's Junkyard Dogs. I was a member of the Redco band for two of the late James Brown pregame performances at Sanford Stadium. I was in Sanford Stadium when Scott Warner just about single-handedly beat Clemson in 1980 and was a part of the worst in bonkers when Kevin Butler kicked it 100,000 miles. Are you telling me we can go back to those days? I'll take that in a heartbeat," with all reverence to the late Larry Munson. And, yeah, so obviously Scott would love a return of the days of the Junkyard Dog-style defense. Austin Bannon said, "I'd be happy to even go back to the David Pollock, Thomas Davis, Jermaine Phillips, Boss Bailey days of the early 2000 defense. Although it seems like the officials no longer allow half the highlight reel plays those guys made," Austin says. And, yeah, I certainly have noticed that myself. Austin Bannon then finishes his comment by saying, "Come to think of it, it's no wonder why Brian Van Gorder looked so good back then. You know, maybe it was taking advantage of a rule book that was a little more lax then than it is now." But maybe the most interesting comment of all came from Clint Paschal at the show page there at DogNation.com, who, in response to all the talk about an improved UGA defense, a UGA defense reminding fans of the really good performances of the Brian Van Gorder era in the early 2000s or the Irk Russell era in the early 1980s, says, "Blah, blah, blah, blah. Until we start getting sacks, good quarterbacks are going to pick us apart. No slam against our defensive backs, because any good quarterback that isn't under pressure will pick apart even the best defensive backs." And there is an element of that point that I think is a good one, especially when it comes to the SEC East for some reason. There is just this history in this division, the one that Georgia plays in, of sacks being the crucial determining factor for which team wins the division. Let me give you a couple of instances of what I'm talking about here. Last year, Florida won the division and had the most sacks of any team in the division. It had 31. But the real trend is what happened in the years before that. Florida won it in 2015, had 40 sacks. Florida won it in 2014, had 42. In 2013, I'm sorry, I should say Missouri won the division in 2014. It had 42 sacks. Missouri won the division in 2013, had 41 sacks. In fact, if you go back the last 8 years, which is as far back as the data at college football CFBstats.com goes back, that's the website I like to use for a lot of statistical stuff. It goes back to 2008. And in that span, only once in the last 8 years has the East been won by a team that did not have the most sacks in the division. Georgia won it in 2012. I think Georgia had 35. That year it was South Carolina, had the most sacks in the division, 41, something along those lines. But for 7 of the last 8 years at least, and maybe the data goes back even farther than that, I was just too lazy to research at another website, the team with the most sacks wins the division, and it's taken 40 or more sacks in 3 of the last 4 years to have the most in the SEC East and, of course, to win the division. So the simple point here is pretty obvious, that if Georgia can get to 40 sacks this season, as the commenter there at DogNation.com mentioned, then Georgia can probably consider itself on the way to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. So the obvious question becomes, can Georgia do that? I think the answer is yes. I think Georgia can get to 40 sacks, and I think Georgia can have more sacks than anybody else in the SEC East this year. And one of the main reasons is that Georgia actually improved in this category pretty significantly last season. Georgia got 29 in Kirby's first year on the job and had just 21 in the year before that. So that's pretty significant improvement. And not to mention that getting Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy, those two very good outside linebackers who could have maybe tried the NFL on for size, coming back to Georgia for their final season, it helps as well. In fact, Kirby Smart talked about what both of those guys returned, Davin Bellamy and Lorenzo Carter, means for UGA.
I think anytime you get the leadership of those two guys, you know, Lorenzo affects the game so much. He's so active. I mean, the TCU game, it's crazy how many plays he made, just causing fumbles, stripping the balls down, running things down. He's working really hard because that was one of the big things with Lorenzo, studying on coming back or not. He knew it was a target area for him to add some weight, so he's been able to do that. Now let's see if he can go play with it. Let's see if he can sustain and be active with that. And same thing with Bellamy, being active in pass rush. But you know, more and more teams, you're having to get more athletic on defense to defend them, and having those two back certainly helps.
Yeah, so Carter and Bellamy, both the kind of athletic guys that can play against the spread offenses that are prevalent in college football and in the SEC in particular these days. But also the main point there is the ability to rush the passer, and Kirby Smart kind of touches on that too. But it's not just Carter and Bellamy who have a chance to impact Georgia's sack total this season. I'd also add Jonathan Ledbetter in that conversation too. I mean, ESPN recently, Edward Ashoff writing, called him Georgia's most improved player of the spring. What Ashoff wrote about Jonathan Ledbetter at ESPN.com was, talk about a real turnaround, Ashoff says. After being suspended for 7 games last season because of 2 alcohol-related arrests during the offseason, Ledbetter is in line to be a full-time starter this season. He did start 4 of the last 7 games that he eventually played in last year, but he was more focused this spring and much more productive. He's being looked at as a leader and a playmaker for this defense. Edward Ashoff goes on to say about Jonathan Ledbetter, outside of just being a better teammate, Ledbetter has seen his development take off, being more cognizant of his technique and hustle. Ledbetter is in better shape, and he finished the spring registering 4 tackles with a tackle and a half for loss, including a sack in the spring game. Once again, that's Edward Ashoff with some words of praise for Jonathan Ledbetter at ESPN.com. And as far as the point about Ledbetter having better conditioning moving into 2017, well, that's certainly something that Kirby Smart has noticed. Take a listen to how Kirby Smart answers a question back during the spring when he was asked about the weight and the look of Jonathan Ledbetter and how different he appears this spring compared to maybe his previous appearances in UGA Springs of the past. Here's Kirby Smart once again.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Everybody's saying that. I think he's around 68, 70. Play that. Now, I think he looks better. I agree with you there. I think he's transformed some of that, but it's not actual pounds. He's quicker. He's playing faster. He's been pretty consistent so far in the spring of the guys up front. You get the same consistent performance. He's got the stamina to go play 3-4 plays in a row and run things down, where some of those other guys, they can't do that. And you can't sub. I mean, they're not going to let you sub. So how many guys can we play up front and just leave him in the game? Right now, he may be the only guy that's playing to that level. And I think it comes from his off-season conditioning. He took it really serious, took a lot of pride in it, and I hope it continues to pay off for him.
And Kirby's right. It may very well continue to pay off for him. And it might pay off for Georgia, too. If it can produce sacks the way recent division winners like Florida and Missouri have here in the SEC East in past years, then it's probably going to be UGA that punches its ticket to Atlanta for the SEC Championship game this season. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We air there each and every day at noon, normally on video at 10 a.m. on Facebook Live. I had a couple issues to take care of here on this Wednesday morning, so we're not on Facebook today, but we'll be back on the video version for Thursday's show. And for those of you who normally watch us on video but checking out the audio version today, we certainly appreciate you being with us here for Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, the podcast can always be found at iTunes, dognation.com, pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. Speaking of dognation.com, don't forget, you have just a couple of days left. I think it closes off 11:59 p.m. on Friday night to go to dognation.com and get signed up for our Kroger Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. As I said, Kroger's bringing it to you. This is more than just a spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus, although you will be going with us from Chicago to South Bend if you win this thing. It's also your chance to win lodging, airfare, tickets to the big one in September in South Bend. It's all courtesy of Kroger, and it's your chance to win at dognation.com. But you've got to get signed up this week, so make sure you go ahead and do that. Let me also remind you now, just 163 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, Jacksonville, this October. We believe that good Georgia fans are Gator haters first and foremost, and we love our Gator Hater t-shirts, our Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts that you can find at shopdognation.com. You can get free shipping on those. Check them out, shopdognation.com. We look forward to seeing a whole bunch of these around Dog Nation this summer and then, of course, throughout the fall. All right, thanks for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show, and hope you enjoy Josh Ward right now. Really interesting SEC talk with him. A lot of it centers on Georgia. Great to have you with us. And I want to welcome in a good friend to us here at Dog Nation Daily, and both SECCountry.com as well as Josh Ward, who you can hear on the radio up in Knoxville each and every day on WNML, and also a part of the Tennessee podcast for SECCountry.com each and every day. Josh, welcome back to Dog Nation Daily. How you doing today?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me.
So a lot of times we have you on, we talk about the situation at Tennessee. That's always important to us. Anytime Georgia's getting ready to play a game against the Vols, or we're kind of in that off-season mode where we're looking ahead to Tennessee, we'll do some Vol stuff here today, but we'll kind of push that back towards the back of the interview for a moment. Let me start instead, if you don't mind, with some of the stuff that's been going on here at Georgia, because I think it's a time – it's interesting to get that outside perspective on what people might be thinking about the Georgia Bulldogs, and in particular this. You know, Barrett Salee, sort of a friend of both of ours, put this out on Twitter the other day, some Bovada national championship odds. And according to Bovada, the online sports book, Georgia 20-1 to win the national championship this season, which is really better odds than the defending national champion Clemson, which is only 22-1, according to Bovada. When you kind of think about Georgia in the upcoming season, I realize we're still a long way away from, you know, actually making any kind of official predictions necessarily, but when you think about Georgia, what do you think?
Well, I think Georgia should be really good. I think Georgia has the potential to become a really good team. You know, Georgia, to me, is also interesting because last year it was an okay season with a first-year coach. I know that big picture, the expectations, including this upcoming year, are going to be much higher because you get rid of Mark Richt, you expect to improve on what he did, and he still did a lot of good things there. 50 wins in five seasons leading up to Kirby Smart's season last year. But also, you know, Georgia, the odds right now might seem a little too optimistic based on last year's results, but what if Tennessee doesn't catch a Hail Mary? And what if Georgia converts a fourth down against Vanderbilt and then scores and is a 9-win team in the regular season, and all of a sudden we might even have too high expectations? So the truth of what Georgia will probably end up being this season, I think, is somewhere in the middle. I think Georgia should be a better team. It should be able to run the football as long as the offensive line is good enough. Georgia certainly has the running backs necessary to be able to run the football. And then what happens with Jacob Eason? How much can Jake Fromm push him to become? Because I think Eason's the guy. I think he has a ton of talent when you watch him play. That's obvious. What can he really become right away as a second-year quarterback in the SEC? And then defensively, can they be disruptive up front? What are the numbers going to look like on defense? That's a big question to me. If I had to guess, the Bovada odds, when you look and you see numbers like that, that might be a little too optimistic for me. But I think Georgia should be a good team. I think a problem that might be presented is the East. I don't think it has a terrible team. I think Missouri is going to be better. I think Kentucky, Vanderbilt, South Carolina can at least be problematic, and Florida and Tennessee will be pretty good at least. It's going to be a tough division to go through and take a big leap in, which Georgia's trying to do.
Yeah, listen, I agree with almost everything you said there, especially what you said there at the end about the SEC East. I do think this is a different kind of division this year in which not only are the bad teams going to be better, the bottom half of this division is going to probably be much improved, but the top half of this division is probably going to have more, you know, nationally ranked teams than what we've seen really over the last couple of years. On par, you know, this notion that the SEC West has been way better than the SEC East, that may have been true for the last few years. I don't know that that's necessarily true this season. There could be a good bit more parity, a good bit more balance between the two divisions in the SEC this year.
Yeah, and let's see what happens at quarterback. I mentioned Eason there at Georgia, Bentley at South Carolina entering his second season now with more experience than was probably expected when he first arrived in Columbia. You know, what he was able to do as a freshman could help him step into a big second year. Florida and Tennessee, at Tennessee, we know there's going to be a new starting quarterback. At Florida, there could be a young quarterback named Felipe Franks on the field as a redshirt freshman with a ton of talent. If Missouri is going to be better, like I mentioned, I expect the Tigers to be, well, then Drew Locke has to probably be a huge reason why that's the case. Kentucky trying to figure things out. Kyle Shermer, year three at Vanderbilt. So I think an issue for just the league overall has been quarterback play. Now, the West has some guys they feel great about as well. I think there's some obvious names there. But if the young quarterbacks in the Eastern Division continue to develop and can get close to reaching what their potential is, at least based on the track that they're supposed to be on, that could help these schools as well. But it's been a weird time for the East over the last few years. You know, the Butch Jones and Mark Stoops are they are the elder statesman in the division. It's a new era for Georgia. Jim McElwain, we're trying to figure out exactly what he can be at Florida. He's won the division twice, but Florida expects to do a lot more than that moving forward. So this next year or two, I think it starts with quarterback play. The schools that can get the best out of that position, especially among the big three, Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, I think they have the best chance to emerge and try to compete as best they can with the top team from the West, which most often, as long as Nick Saban's going to be there, will be Alabama.
You mentioned Jacob Eason a moment ago, the Georgia quarterback. Up there in Knoxville, do you get the sense of something that we see around the state of Georgia and around Dog Nation, which is Eason is still an overwhelmingly popular player with Georgia fans, but there is an element of polarization here in terms of the fans who absolutely believe that Eason's going to take the next step with his development, be a really good quarterback as a sophomore, and sort of a growing skepticism that maybe G-Day didn't provide everything it should have provided, and maybe the freshman year maybe wasn't as good as it should have been for a former Gatorade player of the year coming out of high school, and maybe all of a sudden some of these other sophomore quarterbacks in the SEC are looking pretty good. Do you get a sense of the polarization that might exist around Dog Nation in terms of whatever Eason's going to become here in his second season?
I wouldn't want to be a quarterback in 2017. Now, I would like the ability, Brandon, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but no, I know what you mean.
The attention that comes with it is pretty tough. And Eason, with that five-star label, he's expected to do a lot. And I think for a true freshman, I think he lived up, in my opinion, to what he should have been. But now that you've played as a true freshman, the expectation is by your second year, you're ready to become a great player. And I don't know that that's easier said than done. It also probably doesn't help some young quarterbacks that a guy like Johnny Manziel or Jameis Winston, these young quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts last year is a true freshman. It now follows him that he has a big freshman year. So, okay, what can you do next? Because a few quarterbacks have been able to do it, you're expected, if you are a high four-star or five-star quarterback or you have some early success, that you're supposed to become a great player. And sometimes it still takes a little time to develop. It's also interesting at Georgia because you have another young quarterback from inside the state this time that is well thought of in Jake Fromm. But for me, I think Eason is a guy that I still expect to have some ups and downs, and that's why I mentioned the running game first with Georgia, and that's why I would rely so much on them because I still want to give Jacob Eason time. But there'll be some games where he probably has to go make some plays with his arm and go win you some games. And if it goes the other way, then I think there's a good chance that unfair criticism can follow him. But that comes with being a quarterback at a major university, especially in the SEC in 2017.
Georgia's kind of in the position this year that Tennessee was in last year. Most everybody's probably going to pick Georgia win the East, or at least a lot of people are probably going to. And, you know, the national rankings are going to show some favor to Georgia. Vols were in that spot last year, kind of didn't live up to the hype. Are Tennessee fans kind of enjoying this offseason, kind of flying under the radar a little more, you know, not getting a lot of that national attention, you know, not, you know, having to worry about hype and living up to expectations, maybe getting a chance to sneak up on some teams this year, which is always fun for fans? Are Tennessee fans enjoying a quieter offseason compared to some of the hype from a year ago?
No, I don't think Tennessee fans have enjoyed too much of anything recently, at least not the feedback that I'm receiving. They enjoyed picking up a quarterback commitment on Friday last week. Adrian Martinez, yeah, is a four-star quarterback. When that news breaks, people get excited. But no, not really. I think they're trying to figure out what they're supposed to feel because it is a new time having to replace Josh Dobbs, Derek Barnett, and Alvin Kamara, these big-name players that were really good but didn't live up to, as a team, everything that was expected this past season, as you mentioned, being picked to win the East and falling short of that. And there's also the, okay, 4 years in, now heading into year five with Butch Jones. If it is a transitioning year, but it feels like the last few years, now fans just think, okay, we have to keep waiting, and what if it doesn't work out? It's been 10 years since Tennessee won the East. So social media can kind of warp the opinion or the perception of what fans think. There are a lot of fans that just say, hey, back-to-back 9-win seasons, back-to-back top 25 seasons, that's pretty good. Let's give this new rebuild a little more time. But there are a lot of fans that are saying, yeah, we'd give you more time if you'd won the East last year, but you didn't. Sure. Now we have to wait even longer. So I can't get a great read, but There haven't been a lot of positive messages that have been sent to me or calls that have come into me over the last few months.
Josh, really good stuff. We appreciate your insight on Georgia, the SEC, and everything going on here. And, of course, you're a good friend to us here at Dog Nation Daily. And for the UGA fans who want a little more of you, how can we find you on Twitter? Where can we find you on the radio?
Yeah, Josh_Ward is the Twitter handle on the radio in Knoxville on 99.1. Of course, the SEC Country Podcast with what's going on with Tennessee. That's up there every single day.
Yeah, looking forward to more of that. And we'll catch up with you again here on Dog Nation Daily very soon. Thanks so much for your time.
You got it. Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Josh Ward. Check him out every day at SECCountry.com. Love his thoughts on the SEC. Don't love the Tennessee Vols necessarily, but he does bring good Tennessee information. This guy's also following the rest of the SEC too. It's great to have him on Dog Nation Daily. By the way, did you know this? That the average buy here, pay here car is 8 to 10 years old, but the average age of cars at U.S. auto sales is just 3. You see, new car dealerships want good credit, and the buy here, pay here guys overcharge for tired, old beaters with fresh wax and an air freshener. But U.S. Auto Sales is not like that. U.S. Auto Sales has better, newer model vehicles and quick and easy in-house financing. So regardless of what your scores are, you get more with U.S. Auto Sales. That's the fact. So make sure you check them out at usautosales.info. And, of course, it's great to have U.S. Auto Sales as one of the sponsors for our Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend coming up in September. Time now for our SEC Through. It's brought to you by SECCountry.com as well. Also, make sure you check out SEC Country Live today, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook page. And some of the stories that we'll talk about on SEC Country Live today, almost for sure. I thought Aaron Torres had an interesting piece at FoxSports.com where he looked at some coaches on the hot seat and how the schedule this season for those teams might impact those coaches' futures. And 3 SEC coaches show up on his list. Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, Butch Jones at Tennessee, and Gus Malzahn at Auburn. Let me start with Malzahn here for a moment, because I think the Malzahn part of this is the most interesting, because Malzahn would seem to be the guy that has the wildest potential swing of fate and fortune. You know, I think Auburn is going to be good this year. Now, it bothers me that so many other people are kind of joining me on that prediction, because Auburn has a way of not living up to the hype when people expect something from them, and frankly, no one is right when everyone's on the same side of something. And right now, it seems like there is a lot of folks kind of lining up to pick Auburn at the moment. But that aside, it is objectively true that with a former 5-star quarterback and, you know, a good bit of talent on both sides of the ball, that Auburn has a chance to be good this season. However, Malzahn has disappointed a lot in recent years. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, much like last season, when that battle went on between Les Miles and Gus Malzahn, that felt like, for those of us that grew up watching NWA wrestling in the 80s, it felt a little bit like a loser leaves town match. Malzahn won that game. Miles eventually did get fired. The same kind of swing of fate could happen for Malzahn this season, where he could be in the conversation for the college football playoff, or Auburn could be in the conversation for a new coach. I mean, you have both of those scenarios at play here, which is pretty interesting. The Butch Jones part of this, it's not as wild of a swing. I don't see a very high threshold for Tennessee this season. I see Tennessee fans having to determine just how much they're willing to put up with in terms of somewhat mediocre results. I think just making a bowl, you know, getting to that 7-win threshold for Tennessee would probably be a pretty significant achievement this season, and Tennessee fans will then have to decide if that's going to be good enough for them. By the way, speaking of predictions for Auburn, Booker McFarland, I guess he goes on ESPN, and he's also talking up Auburn as well. I've heard some people kind of, you know, Mike Johnson, including my partner at SEC Country Live, kind of ripped me on Twitter for just kind of being, you know, another basic person in the crowd here saying the same thing essentially everybody else is saying. Even some of y'all are kind of making fun of me and mocking me here for, you know, how wrong I'm going to be when this sort of blows up in my face. And I'll certainly take that. As I said to somebody on Twitter yesterday, half the fun of this when it goes wrong for some of you is going to be mocking me. And I totally get that, especially those of you who watch SEC Country Live. You're pretty familiar with what I've kind of been saying on that. USA Today had an interesting piece where it looked at the Heisman candidates right now who are not getting enough attention. And, you know, there were a few SEC names mentioned here, a couple guys from LSU, Darius Geis, Arden Key. But Jared Stidham was in that mix from Auburn, but really no mention of Nick Chubb, which I think is interesting because it's obvious right now Chubb's not getting too much attention, too much conversation moving into the season. So maybe the folks at USA Today think it's justifiable and justified not to be giving that attention to Chubb. I certainly understand where that comes from. Statistically, not a great year for him in 2016. But as we've said before, there are reasons to assume that it's going to be better for Chubb this season. He's healthier. The offensive line's probably going to be better. And you certainly can hope for better performance from the Georgia quarterback situation led by Jacob Eason. All those things lead me to believe that maybe Chubb is flying under the radar, even for the riders who are out there looking for people flying under the radar. I have pretty high expectations for Chubb this season. We'll see how that plays out. We'll make that your SEC through. As we wrap up the show today, I wanted to make mention of the fact that, you know, yesterday as we were getting ready to go on the air, that's when the details first started emerging as to why these UGA associate head coaches from tennis had been suspended for, I guess, the allegations of stealing prescription drugs. And I made the decision not to talk about it on the show yesterday just because it was just too fresh and too new, and I didn't really understand much about it. And even after a full day to kind of process all this, still, I just don't really have a whole lot to say about this. It feels to me more like a crime beat story than a UGA sports beat story. I do have tremendous sympathy for those that truly care about UGA tennis, because I would imagine this is a gigantic distraction for that sport. And for the people who don't care about tennis necessarily but do care about UGA athletics overall, you just hope that whatever went on with these coaches is truly isolated to just these people. A terrible situation for the tennis program, and hopefully a resolution coming soon. Thanks so much for being with us on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll see you again tomorrow.